Prahlad Maharaj. And he's a great soul. And one of his great qualities here is being exhibited by this statement he's making. But it's in response to his, what we say, powerful father. Radhikashipu was powerful. And his power came by way of material austerities. One can do that. One can follow certain principles and become powerful by rejecting ordinary sense gratification and restricting one's mind and senses in a particular way, gain material intelligence, material influence, material power, material wealth, but so many various types of opulences that come by way of material life. And he had done that successfully, so successfully that the entire universe, not just, you know, this planet, but the universe was subjugated by the power of Hiranyakashipu. He's so great, actually, in one sense, we have to give him credit. Although he's a big demon, he deserves some credit. Therefore, in other verses, when Hiranyakashipu speaks, the word is Sri Hiranyakashipu Uvacha. Although he's a demon, and of course, you know, no one appreciates demons or their qualities of a demon, he had managed to do something that no other demon had ever done before, and took over the kingdom of Indra and subjugated all the demigods except Brahma, Shiva, and apparently Narada was playing along with his game, but he was not subjugated by Hiranyakashipu. So when Prahlad Maharaj, and he's only 5 years old, but he's a Mahabhagavat, pure. He was a Mahabhagavat from the time of his birth. He learned transcendental knowledge directly from his spiritual master, Sri Narada Muni, still while he was in the womb. Sometimes people come up to me. It's actually happened twice since I've been here. Can you bless my child that's about to be born? Ladies, they want that blessing that they pray. Fathers also, and they want the son to be a great devotee or have all good qualities. So they seek blessings in different ways. So one of my responses is expose that child to transcendental sound vibration. And that was Narada Muni. He spoke to Prahlad Maharaj's mother in such a way that although she listened, she forgot everything, practically everything. But Prahlad Maharaj was in the room and he heard the sound vibration spoken by his spiritual master, Narada Muni, in such a way that he recalled everything. So he was full in transcendental knowledge, hearing this knowledge from the greatest of all sadhus, Sri Narada Muni himself. And he was always also a nitya siddha by birth. You know, he was an eternally liberated soul. So at 5 years old, he's speaking some of the most amazing philosophy. That's why in certain sections of the Bhagavatam it says, Prahlad Maharaj, the best of all devotees. Only 5-year-old boy. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he would love to hear Srimad Bhagavatam read by Sri Gadadhar Pandit. And his favorite pastimes were Prahlad Maharaj and Dhruva Maharaj. It says that he would love to hear those stories over and over again. And Gadadhar Pandit would just read. So what a great personality we're hearing from. Although a little child, we might say. Because, you know, at 5 years old, you can't expect much from a boy or a girl of that age. But not only, he's making ordinary great sages look like, you know, like ordinary sages by his knowledge. Such deep philosophical understanding. And so his mind and senses are so controlled. His father's about to kill him, or trying to in different ways. And yet he's speaking very clear, poignant, unfearful types of statements. He has no fear at all. And it's explained here why he has no fear. Because he knows nothing can happen without the will of the Lord. It's a deep principle that things are happening, or apparently happening or not happening, but there's behind the whole thing, there is a cause, or an apparent cause. There's a remote cause, and there is the apparent cause. The apparent cause is all we see. When something happens or something doesn't happen, we either blame or give credit to someone or something or circumstances. But Lord Brahma gives the understanding. Ishwar Parma Krishna Satchit Ananda Vigraha An Adir Adir Govinda Sarvakarna Karnam. This last line, Sarvakarna Karnam, really is the essence of that of our existence in relationship to the Supreme Person and to everything. That Krishna is the cause of all causes. So when Hiranyakashipu is overwhelmed with astonishment, because no one could defy him, and no one could match him with his strength and power, and here it is, a five-year-old boy, who is his son, is not only defying him, but preaching to him. It's not like he's simply rejecting what Hiranyakashipu says and doing his own thing. He's preaching to his father, too. There's one scripture, it's called the Hari Bhakti Sudodaya. And in that, it's a small scripture, it's about maybe 90 pages. And the book's about this big. And in that is more of the details of the pastimes of Dhruva Maharaj and Prahlad Maharaj. And in that book, Prahlad Maharaj is constantly being quoted as preaching to his father. He did everything to try to save his father. It wasn't like he was still thinking, well, you know, he's lost. He's a big demon. He just wants to subjugate everything. Of course, he criticized his father many times, but in a way that would be, that he would awaken to his, when we say, illusion. You know, so speaking very strongly, you know, that you're deep in attachment to materialist household life. And, you know, you're just an illusion. If you want to get out of the illusion, you have to take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Take the dust of Vrindavan. Take the dust of the lotus feet of great souls and smear it on your body. And then you can be successful. What is your success now? You just conquered the universe. But still, you're miserable. Hiranyakashipu was miserable. He wasn't happy. This is an example. We want to somehow or other give credence to the philosophy that there's no happiness in the material world. Here's a good example. Here's a person who had everything. Followers, wealth, whatever he had and wanted at his disposal. And he was miserable. He was never happy. Why? Because the more he had, the more he wanted. And the more he got, the less satisfied he was. So here, being overwhelmed with the words of his son, or the power of his son, he says, where did you get your power from? And Prahlad Maharaj is saying, the same place that everyone gets the power from. Where you're getting your power from. There's no other source of power. There's only one. And this is the last thing Hiranyakashipu wanted to hear. That his number one enemy was the source of his own strength. Oh, that just fried him. He was so, you know, that'll come up. He became so angry. But Prahlad Maharaj is speaking the truth. And not in a philosophical way, but in a realized way. He knows that there's no power outside it. And Prabhupada gives a nice example here. That all forms of heat and light are manifested in different ways as different powerful fires. There's little sparks, and then there's flames, and there's big fires. But all of it, although it's a variety the essence is coming from the sun. The sun is the source of all fire, all power in that way. So in the same way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the source of everything. And for devotees, this is very important to understand, because it's the feature of success and it's the feature of pridelessness. Success may, it comes by way of the mercy of the Lord. But in our endeavors, we do something, or we do some service. And maybe some recognition is given to that service. Or we have some abilities, or some proclivities, or some qualities, or some talents. We might say, oh, it's previous karma, and in many cases it is. But actually, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Sarvasya chaham riddhisani visto, matat smirta jnanam apohanam cha vedaischa savam aham eva vedyo vedanta krid veda vedeva chaham. So what is Krishna saying? He's putting his the understanding of everything in these first two lines, that all knowledge, all forgetfulness, everything is coming from me. If I don't remind you, or if I don't allow you to do something, or to remember something, you can't remember it. You can't do anything. It's like, well, I give it as an example, one beautiful story. It seems that this story is a little indication of how the living entity does have some independence in relationship to everything. But still, that independence is only fragmental and ultimately can be crushed at any second. When Chankazi was attacking the Sankirtan party, when the devotees were performing Sankirtan and the Brahmins were complaining to the Chankazi. So the Chankazi took action and he broke the drum. And he threatened the Vaishnavas that if you continue with this Sankirtan, and then, of course, I'll come back and plunder all your wealth and riches and, you know, put you in prison. And not only you, but the whole area. So his threats were really powerful. So the devotees were scared, fearful at least. And they were kind of staying indoors and not chanting openly. And then Srivas Thakur, he was praying to his deity, Lord Nisringadev, who was his personal deity. And while he was praying, Lord Chaitanya was walking in that area. And knowing the prayers of Srivas Thakur, he broke the door down. He came crashing into the house of Srivas Thakur in a very powerful way. And he said, what can that Chankazi do? He can't do anything without my sanction. He is not independent. But then the Lord went on to say, if he acts against my will, then I will, retaliate. So the Lord sort of gave a little indication that even though his will is there, still the independence of the living entity can act. But it's still not independent, that it can't produce the results of that action. You can defy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You can refuse to surrender to the Lord. You can do things that are contrary to your own interest and contrary to the interest of the Lord. But that doesn't mean you're free. That freedom causes one to be unfree or being crushed by the other energy of the Lord, the material energy, or Maya, like that. So in that sense, when we say that Krishna is the source of everything, he's even the source of your independence. So the best use of independence is to give it up. That's the best use of independence. The more dependent we become, the more independent we become. Does that make sense? The more dependent we become, the more independent, because to become independent means to act within the material energy. And therefore, one becomes more dependent on the material energy. And therefore, one becomes, what we say, more bound up. But by surrendering to the spiritual energy, one gets free from the dependence on the material energy and takes dependence on the spiritual energy and becomes free. Because there's no freedom on the material platform. Because the three modes of material energy are like chains or like guards and bars and various types of locking devices that cause one to act and think in a certain way and get a particular result accordingly. But on the spiritual platform, because the nature of the soul is to love and serve God and to be dependent on God in all circumstances, that's why Sanatana Goswami, when he describes what are the principles of a Vaishnava in terms of surrender, one of them is complete dependence on the mercy of the Lord. Complete. So that is a process to learn how to become completely dependent on Krishna in all circumstances. How does that dependent manifest? Or how does one access that dependence? We might say, well, while I'm doing my service or whatever I'm doing, how do I become dependent? When we realize that as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, karmana varikadaste ma phalecha kadachana, ma karma phalahetu arbor mate sungosan karmani. He says you have a right to perform your duty, but you're not entitled to the results of your activities. Never consider yourself the cause of the results of your activities, nor never be attached to not doing your duty. So the living entity has to act, but it has to be either under the influence of the material or spiritual energy. So to depend on Krishna means to be successful. Even if the results of the activities do not come out according to one's desire, still, if one is dependent on Krishna, that activity is perfect, and it's accepted in that way by the Lord and the spiritual master. So Srila Prabhupada teaches the process of how to become dependent on Krishna, or the spiritual master teaches that through practical example and through philosophical teachings. And what are the philosophical teachings? Is that ultimately, we are small. We cannot do anything without the will of the Lord, or without the mercy of the Lord, or without the empowerment of the Lord. And how to become empowered by the Lord to do things, Prabhupada makes a very simple but very direct statement. He says, always remember Krishna's lotus feet. He says, if you always remember the lotus feet of the Lord, then you will never be obstructed in the course of your execution of devotional service. Now, you can't always remember the lotus feet of the Lord to fulfill your material desires, because that's the best way to become purified of material desires. So, remembering the lotus feet of the Lord, it means that is the success of anything we do in spiritual life. And to forget Krishna, or to forget that we are dependent on Krishna in all circumstances, means to be in the Hiranyakashipu mentality. Or the idea that, and Prabhupada says, he uses strong words. It's interesting how Prabhupada uses words. You know, if we tried to use words like he does, we might sound like, you know, a puffed up rascal, you know, or someone who is just impudent and full of false pride. But Prabhupada's giving clear understanding of what is reality. And he says, one who has no intelligence cannot understand his philosophy of dependence. So what does that include? Everybody. How many people depend? Sometimes people pray to God, but their dependence on God in the prayer is that God should do what they want. That is the nature of the prayer. That I'm depending on you for your help to fulfill my needs or my desires. But that's not dependence on the Lord. That's something else. That means that you want the Lord to be your order fulfiller. Here's the Lord's. And even in devotional service, when we try to carry our devotional service, we always think how best to serve Krishna in such a way that Krishna is pleased. Or how to execute my devotional service in such a way that the spiritual master will be pleased and the process of devotional service will move forward. So a devotee thinks like that. Not that we simply think, well, I did this before, I know how to do it, I can do it again. But then again, one can not understand that ultimately Krishna is the source of all intelligence and all remembrance and all forgetfulness too. I think of an example. I can think of an example of how forgetfulness manifests itself. But it was a curse by a great sage. It was Karna, the warrior Karna. He wanted military training. Now he was born, or apparently, he was of course the son of Kunti and the sun god. When she called the sun god with her mantras, he gave her a son, and that was Karna. Powerful son. He was born Kshatri. He had built-in armor in his chest. But being an unmarried girl, she didn't want to reveal that she had a child. So she left the child in a basket along the river, and a Sudra family found the child and raised it. So he was known as a Sudra, not as a Kshatriya. But he was actually a Kshatriya. So he came to Parasaram, and he wanted training. Parasaram said, "I don't like Kshatriyas, and I don't give any knowledge to any Kshatriyas." Karna had been brought up in a Brahminical way, so he said, "I'm a Brahmin, so I'm not a Kshatriya." So he said, "All right, if you're a Brahmin, that's fine. I'll teach you military art if you want it, but no Kshatriyas." So Karna was serving his spiritual master by massaging his body. And he had received much knowledge about military fighting and arts and so many things from Parasaram. So while he was massaging his body, Parasaram fell asleep. And so he was massaging. And while that was happening, a huge bug, a very dangerous bug, landed on Karna's leg and started to bite him, and really started to bite him, and he was feeling in tremendous pain. But he didn't want to stop, because if he did, he felt that it would disturb Parasaram, because he was actually putting him to sleep, and he was enjoying it. He said, "How can I stop my service to my spiritual master?" Jai Sri Sri Radha Gokula Nanda Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Gaur Nitai Ki Jai. So he was thinking, "I can't stop," but the pain was so much. Finally, the bug bored a hole in his leg and blood squirted out, and it landed on Parasaram, and he woke up. And when he saw what was happening, he said, "How is this possible? You're a Brahmin. No Brahmin can bear such pain. You're not a Brahmin. Only a Kshatriya could tolerate such pain. Therefore, I see that you have cheated me, and therefore I curse you. The knowledge that I've given you, when you need it the most, you will forget it. That is my curse." So he cursed him to forget. And then, of course, when he was on the battlefield fighting with Arjuna, he couldn't remember the mantras for accessing the weapons that he needed. And then, he was killed. So he was cursed to forget. So, of course, Parasaram is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's a manifestation of the Lord in a particular aspect of that incarnation. So if that is the nature of a devotee. Devotee knows. There's one beautiful prayer. It's by Bilva Mangala Thakur. It's from the Krishna Karanamrita. It's a wonderful prayer. He says, "My dear Lord, with your mercy, what is the use of anyone else's mercy? And my dear Lord, without your mercy, what is the use of anybody else's mercy? I only want your mercy." Because that is the complete source of all mercy and all success. So Prahlad Maharaj is giving us the clear understanding what is success in devotional service. That everything comes by way of the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So a devotee practices depending on the Lord in all situations. Sometimes we try to balance dependence of the Lord and absorption into the service. But absorption in the service with the consciousness of dependence on the Lord is dependence on the Lord. And what are we trying to do when we execute our service? Are we trying to get a successful material result? Sometimes we are, when we preach or when we're, you know, working to accomplish something. Say we're trying to build a temple or trying to, you know, create some kind of facility or something. But we know that success doesn't so much depend on the result, but on the endeavor. And that is dependence on the Lord. And dependence on the Lord means to be free from false ego. Because false ego comes when we execute or do something and we take credit for that. Because when you depend on the Lord, you also have to give credit to the Lord, or to give credit to the Lord's pure devotee, who is manifesting the Lord's mercy through him. Therefore, he gets the credit, although we apparently do the activity. So sometimes we say, oh, you know, all glories to my spiritual master, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, all glories to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but we're not completely like convinced it's like that. You want to know how you're not dependent on the Lord? When you start becoming successful in your devotional service and then you start depending on continual success as the feature of continual success, and then Krishna says, "Oh, okay, time for a little change." Little smashing of the false ego, a little, what we say, teaching one that one is. So therefore, in order to make progress in devotional service, and this is the quality of great souls, they never forget the Lord. They never forget that the mercy of the Lord is everything. So whether it's strength, as it's described here, or ability, or qualities, or anything, it all depends on the mercy of the Lord. You know, Indra, sometimes he forgets that and he acts independent, and then what he gets himself in trouble. Even the demigods forget it. Apparently, sometimes they, because of such powerful positions and such great responsibilities, they act. You know, when Indra was, after he had, you know, received the mantras from Vishwarup, who was given by the Lord to give them the power to create a thunderbolt to kill Vitrasura, you know, Vishwarup was actually also, his quality was, although he was a brahmana, he had inclinations towards the demons. And so when Indra saw Vishwarup performing puja, both to the demigods and to the demons, Indra got a little disturbed. So what he did was he killed Vishwarup, his spiritual master. And therefore he committed a tremendous offense. And he had to suffer tremendously for that reaction. He was, you know, it was two manifestations of Indra's foolishness in that particular pastime. He was being chased by, what is it, sin personified. And he had to hide within a lotus flower, the stem of a lotus flower, for 1 year, and wasn't able to eat. And the fire god had to bring him food. But the fire god cannot go near water. So the fire god was not always coming to give Indra food because he was afraid of the water. And Indra was living in the stem of the water. So he practically starved for a whole year. So here's an example. When one acts independently, you know, such a reaction. So great, even great souls make this mistake. Indra obviously is a great personality. So it happens that we forget, or we become, what we say, more dependent on our own abilities or talents or whatever. But we understand, even if we have abilities, talents, qualities, success, these are also coming from the Lord. It's not that they're independent of the Lord, and once we have them, they're ours. They're also Krishna. They're also coming from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So depending on the Lord really means independence. And as Prahlad Maharaj says, whether they're moving living beings, unmoving living beings, superior, inferior, everyone. And then he even sums it up, including the greatest of all demigods, Lord Brahma, is controlled by the strength of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There's nothing outside of Krishna's control. So for a devotee wants to be controlled by the Lord. Just like a little child loves to be controlled by a powerful and, what we say, qualified parent. Because he knows he can get everything he wants from that parent. He doesn't have to do anything himself. He simply has to be obedient to the parent. And so, a devotee finds great happiness in developing dependence. Whereas the materialists think the more independent I can become, the more I am my own person, and the more I can become successful. And therefore, they're always baffled in everything they do. And they're always in anxiety that whatever I'm doing, will it come out according to my will or my desire like that. But the devotee is not attached to the results of whatever we do. We work in such a way that we are acting in an attached way. This is the key. To act like you're trying to get the results, but to know that the results are not dependent on you. It's like a trick mental, you know, concept. You try your best and you act like it depends on you, but you know it doesn't. Because behind the scene is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's why Prabhupada used to say, I can speak like this because I know behind the scene Krishna's there. And when Prabhupada was challenged by whatever he said, he could always back it up by scriptural references or by his own realizations on his relationship with Krishna. So a devotee knows everything is the mercy of the Lord. Even apparent reverses ultimately are also given sanction or permitted to manifest by the Lord. Any questions?